Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Michael and Patty Show. My name would be Michael, and beside me...
I'm Patty.
What does Patty have to say today?
It is a nice weather day on PEI. We have our first cruise ship that has set port here, and it's kind of exciting to know what season is upon us here.
So if all these biking passengers are listening to this... When you visited Charlottetown, we're looking at your ship. You've got 375 people, first ship just towards the end of April when this is being recorded. If you're new to the podcast, we cover everything Prince Edward Island based on our 41-plus years of combined experience, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, less sleep, thousands of transactions handled, and endless moments of constant entertainment, which is why we created this podcast.
Entertainment is one word, chaos, a little bit of stress, and then also very rewarding and a lot of fun. Getting to meet some really cool people.
Well, there's no doubt there. We could write a book on that. And if you're looking for other sources of information beyond our podcast, be sure to check out our extensive YouTube channels. Join our weekly newsletters, our Twitter feeds, we're on Threads, LinkedIn. We're pretty well everywhere. And additionally, check out the government's website at gov.pe.ca. And if you're a tourist, maybe even you're not, go to peiplay.com to get the tourist guide and other doodads for free of charge. In fact, I think you can download most of them now.
Yeah, especially if you're looking to plan a house hunting trip and you want to be able to take in a little bit of the sightseeing, it's a great site to go and plan your trip and maybe kind of balance it out, make it a little fun too.
I was checking our stats here. We're getting close to 100 episodes, and from what I understand, less than 1% of new podcasts make it to 100 episodes. Most of them fail in around 5 or 6 episodes, so it's good to see we're getting that far. Like I said, endless entertainment and content for the podcast, so we've got good material to use based on our experiences daily. But we've had 732 new listeners to this podcast in the last 2 weeks, which I thought was pretty cool. I didn't know there was that much interest in PEI real estate. So if you are listening to this and you're a new listener, if you have any questions about Prince Edward Island real estate or the PEI culture, which is much different, somebody told me once that had a psychology background that the culture in PEI is very different than what you're going to find in Toronto or even Moncton or Halifax. Would you agree with that, my world traveler?
Yes, actually. Island mentality, island culture in Prince Edward Island is not exempt from that. There's just a different mindset living here on PEI.
So when you get bored, just Google Prince Edward Island culture shock or just culture shock, period. So I had an interesting phone call come in. You know how agents are petrified of answering their phones now because everybody has one. And anytime they drive by a for sale sign, they pick it up to ask questions and they just never know when they are. So it turns into this big riddle.
Yes. And some of it, though, too, is some people don't like answering their phone because they feel they're going to get scammed. So they don't take the call and miss an opportunity, too.
Well, back in the old days, you never miss a phone call because you always thought of it as an opportunity. Today, it's usually Google and Microsoft calls me a lot.
The same.
So this phone call comes in, just to give you an example of what we deal with. And this gentleman says, I'm sitting in front of, and he gives me a number and an address. And I said to him, I said, I don't have that property listed. However, I'd be happy to get to my office here and look it up for you and tell you a little bit about it. And he says, well, your name's on the sign, kind of aggressively. And I said, well, if my name's on the sign, it's probably my listing. So I asked him to describe it to me. So he describes this structure to me. And I said, you're sitting in front of this address, not the address you gave me. Just for something to do, I mapped out what address he was referring to. I figured it was probably 20 minutes away or so. It was 30, almost 40 kilometers away. So he's giving me the wrong address. And then to top it all off, I said to him, I said, that property just sold. He says, well, there's no sold sign on it. And this is down some little laneway out in the middle of nowhere. It sold, and I told him this. I said, it sold about 40 to 50 hours ago. That's why there's no sold sign up. Plus, it's out in the country, so I'm sure our sign guy has higher priorities and taken a half an hour, 45-minute drive to put a sold sign on a property that no one's ever going to see. But this is the sort of stuff we deal with. The moral of the story is, rather than calling the agents, asking them for information on the property, download realtor.ca. It is an absolutely fantastic application, and it will show you everything on a map that is around you for sale. In this particular instance, since it was sold, it would not be listed on realtor.ca, so you can assume it's either sold or it's withdrawn or canceled. Anything to add?
Yeah, and if they cannot, realtor.ca is the one app that I tell all my clients that are looking to, they're looking for real estate, whether they live on PEI or they're going to be traveling and relocating here. That's a really great start. However, if you are in front of a sign and you don't see it on realtor.ca, feel free to call the agent on the sign or the office. A lot of the real estate brokerages on PEI also do include their office number. And just to find out, I mean, it could have been just a quick lapse of time where, with paperwork and getting the listing renewed or something like that. And instead of missing out on the opportunity, don't be afraid to pick up the phone. And if you're a realtor, don't be afraid to answer it. If it is a scam, you have the option of hanging up.
Or you can text the agent.
Yeah, or you can text the agent 100%. A lot of times if we're in an appointment, text messaging as soon as I leave is the first thing that I respond to, because I can do it in my client's driveway, quicken, shoot off a few quick messages, and then I can start getting back to my calls.
And give them the proper address.
That is very important to do that. And it's odd because he's sitting in front of the actual property, but yet he's referencing, and I don't understand where he would have been confused and giving. It must have been the same street, but just in a different community.
No, he was referencing a completely different area. It would be like someone driving around the streets of Toronto and then telling the agent that the house is in Oakville.
Okay.
It was one of those situations. Moving along here, I received an email. It was actually a listener to this podcast that asked me where the bad areas of PEI are. Her name is Sue. I sent you an extensive email, Sue. By the way, thanks for not responding to that.
Maybe she's busy, or maybe it went to her spam.
It could be. It was a long email. What would you say? Where are the bad areas in PEI, Patty?
I wouldn't say there's any real bad areas on PEI. It depends. What is your definition of a bad area?
A bad area is high crime, burning buildings, razor wire fences, barbed wire, cast iron grills on your windows and doors. I've been in these neighborhoods in South America.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know where you go on PEI, but there is no area that represents. So in my opinion, by that definition, there is no bad areas on PEI.
So what would I look for? What would be the better areas? Is there a better area? I would say no, there isn't. I would say it basically depends on what you're looking for.
Yeah, and that's part of my screening and question. I think it's a great question, especially if you're used to living in bigger cities across Canada or anywhere on the planet, to ask that, hopefully, as somebody that's local and in your opinion. I ask that when I travel down in the States, you know, is there some areas in whatever community that I'm in that I should probably stay away from? And I trust my Uber driver to let me know that. So I think it's a great question, Sue, that you had, but I wouldn't say that there's any bad areas. And if you are looking for a certain specific lifestyle, this is part of my initial intake. Where do you live? What are you hoping to have as your lifestyle experience here? Do you want to be close to golf courses, trails, city centers, having amenities? Are you looking more for a rural experience? What are you looking for with regards to travel? Do you need to live close to the airport? Do you need to live close to the bridge? Are you looking to be somebody that wants to be infiltrating into a community and feel a part of it? Or are you somebody that wants to be a little more isolated and live a quiet, private life?
The Unabomber lifestyle.
Yeah. So all of those answers will help me steer and direct a client to an area that best suits the needs that they're looking for. How did you answer that question, Michael?
Well, my response was a couple pages long, but what some of the practical things you might want to consider when deciding on a location would be access to the airport. PEI, there's one major airport that's Charlottetown. We have a second ex-military airport in Sloman Park. If you have a private plane, it will accommodate just about anything. And of course, there's a few grass strips, namely Cablehead East, and there are some others through the island for things like Cessnas. Proximity to the bridge, if you're going to be traversing back and forth to the mainland, that might be important. I'll even add to that to proximity to the ferry. So the ferry is on the east end. The bridge is closer to Summerside. It's in Borden-Carleton. Healthcare access, hospitals. Obviously, the bigger hospitals are in the bigger centers like Charlottetown and Summerside. Entertainment and restaurants, check that out. Shopping, if you're looking for a Home Depot, Kent, Home Hardware, Walmarts, shopping malls. Pick the locations around that if that's where you want to be. And my final word of advice would be, since you're probably going to come here in the spring to the fall to look at properties and everything's great, beautiful, and the roads are dry and there's no high winds or blizzards, consider what that drive is going to be like in the midst of a blizzard in the winter when you have to go to work or get the kids to school.
Yeah, and the kids is the one thing that I was going to end up saying. If you have a family or looking to grow a family, I would also end up making some recommendations with regards to staying closer to a city or a bigger town like Cornwall, Stratford, Montague area, just to make sure that your children would be able to take part in some of the activities that, depending on their interest, they'd be able to, you know, to do here. Hockey, dance class, you know, there's
pickleball, the pickleball tournament,
dancing, musical instruments. These are things that, and like you say too, Michael, during the winter months, you're going to have to be, because that's primarily when all these activities happen, is between September and June. You're going to have to be doing the commute to bring them to all their activities or extracurricular activities that they take part in as part of their school. So you'll want to make sure that. Now, one more thing, again, with regards to having a family, another thing to keep in mind is, are you going to end up living on a main highway? Eventually, that child is going to turn 16, 17, and they're going to have their driver's license. And I know I wouldn't personally want to have any of my kids backing out onto a highway trying to get to school in the morning. So just something to have a little bit of, you know, long-term foresight as to what all your needs are and what area makes the most amount of sense.
Access to walking trails, provincial and national parks, snowmobile trails, and ATV trails is probably something else you want to look at. If you're heavy into ATVs, there's multiple associations, as one would assume there would be with snowmobiles as well.
Yeah, and it just depends on what stage of life you are at, whether you're a retiree or somebody young, and then again, back to the life experience and lifestyle.
And culture. Cultures, even in a single province like PEI and others, may vary depending on where you are in that province. Would you agree with that?
100%. And whether or not you're going to become a part of that community culture that they have, or whether you're always going to be a CFA or come from away and always feel like an outsider. I wouldn't want to always feel like an outsider.
Plus, there's French areas as well, Acadian areas, which reminds me, I want to learn how to speak French, which I gave up in grade 6. I have to restart that now.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we'll hold you to it and see if you actually do.
Well, I was going to learn Spanish, but I felt French might be more useful where we live.
Okay.
AI and full disclosure. I never thought about this, but I was looking at some articles recently which were referring to the extensive use of AI with particularly photos, and it's now moving into video. And I never thought of it. Like back in the old days, we used to use Photoshop. You could remove garbage cans. The dog was on the front lawn. Maybe you've got a telephone pole you didn't want to see, electrical lines, a vehicle in the driveway. But now with AI, it's so mind-blowing what you can do. Just as a test, I took a picture of a waterfront property and I told AI to put people playing on the beach in there. I said, add a cruise ship, add a couple of yachts, color this tree green, get rid of these trees over here, make the grass green. That sort of stuff, you're going to probably see more and more of it, but it should be disclosed that that image, if that's being used for marketing, is indicated that it was AI enhanced, because according to our regulations and rules, pictures have to represent the property, not represent the property after they're edited through AI or Photoshop to remove. I've seen people remove barns and pig farms and the other things I just mentioned. So if there is any modification done, whether it's AI or it's done with Photoshop or a photo editing program, that should be disclosed that that's been done, because buyers can get really disappointed when they show up and the property is nowhere near as nice as it looks on realtor.ca after they spend an hour and a half driving there.
Yeah, and even virtually staging rooms, because that is AI as well, putting furniture in to a home can create a certain kind of vibe and feel. Not that they're buying the furniture as a buyer looking at the property, but it can create disappointment when you actually bring that buyer in and the house is a little rough around the edges. It doesn't present the way it did in the photos. Even though, again, they're not buying the furniture, it may cause a negative emotion for that buyer's experience and cause the seller, that buyer, not moving forward, whereas they may have if there was an accurate representation of the property. I have a funny story with regards to AI. At least makes it look polished and professional. But a couple years ago, a realtor on Prince Edward Island felt that the photos taken, and they were drone aerial photos, it was in an off season, so you didn't have the green trees. And I don't know if I ever showed you this. I think I did, Michael, but they drew in with a green marker trees along the waterfront. And when you first looked at the picture, you wouldn't have noticed that they were marker, but when you zoomed in on the photo, you could completely see the contrast. Completely hilarious. My clients that I sent this package off to, I said, please take note of the pretend marker trees on the waterfront. She did laugh and said, are you guys allowed to do that? And I said, no, but it looks like somebody's child went and got at the marketing material for this particular piece of waterfront land.
There's been websites dedicated to showing off real estate agent photos that are quite entertaining and laughable.
Uh-huh.
We're moving into the planes, trains, and automobiles part of this episode. We've already covered planes. Trains don't exist in PEI, and those railway tracks have been replaced with walking trails now, which I believe they can use for snowmobiles in the winter. You can correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, and then the train stations have been converted as well.
Right on. One of them's in Charlottetown. It's Founders Hall, which used to be a maintenance depot, I think.
Yeah, what about the workers' compensation building?
That was a railway station.
Yes, and then Summerside, I believe it's a restaurant now.
Yep,
used to
absolutely.
Be a library.
So we're going to talk about cars. We'll start off with licensing. First thing you do when you get to PEI and you're a resident, where do you go?
Access PEI.
And you turn in your driver's license from whatever state or province you're in, and they'll give you a nice, shiny PEI driver's license. And they're usually pretty good. The tip I have for that is don't go to the main Access PEI offices. I usually go to a secondary one. If you're in Charlottetown, I would probably go to the mall and show up early in the morning. Probably when they open at 8 o'clock, Summerside, same thing, get there when they open, unless you like sitting around and waiting to get stuff done. Any advice on that?
Yeah, can I say something? On driver's licenses, some provinces will, from the community, the province that you're moving from, will reimburse you for, I believe, either your sticker or your driver's license. They do have something in place that if it's only a month or two in and you had to renew and the timing didn't work out very well, you can be reimbursed for that. Just something to look into.
And incidentally, all your provincial services are under that Access PEI umbrella. So same with healthcare. If you want a health card, you would go through. Today, everything's online. But in theory, I suppose you could show up at Access PEI and take care of all that stuff. Although they'll probably direct you to the website to apply for it.
Well, with regards to healthcare cards, one of the agents in my office applied a year ago for his renewal of his health card. And unfortunately, Access PEI never processed his file. So their tip, their advice for your health card registry is to call in. They said, don't go into Access or anything like that. It just takes a couple minutes. Give us a phone call. We'll renew your health card and get you set up. And sure enough, within 2 weeks, he just got his new one on the weekend here.
Good. Getting back to cars, you'll need a safety. I'm not sure if the safety from whatever state or province you're in will be valid. I do know I've looked it up in the Highway Traffic Act because Access PEI told me that my safety from New Brunswick was not valid here. They are actually incorrect. The last time I read it, it said a safety from Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, or PEI is valid. So that needs to be done every year here. You'll obviously have to have insurance here. The good news is if you're moving from a highly dense and populated area like Patty and I used to live in, your insurance will go to basically nothing in comparison to what it used to be. Did you find that?
Yes. Yeah, it was almost half.
Mine was probably a third or a quarter of what I was paying in the city. Of course, you were living way up north.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
But in the big city, it was a lot more expensive. Service. Now, if you have a Lexus, BMW, Mercedes, Land Rover, Jaguar, good luck getting any warranty service done because none of those dealers exist here. So you'll probably get used to driving to Halifax or Moncton. So it's something to consider when buying a new car and you're getting warranty service. After the warranty period, there are some really good, exceptional auto mechanics that do specialize in different brands, maybe a Japanese brand Toyota or German cars, Porsches, BMWs, Mercedes, Volkswagen. But keep that in mind. If you're buying a new car and you expect to get warranty service, because I know a lot of the new cars also include oil changes and maintenance for the first few years, you'll be driving to Moncton or Halifax. Next is snow tires and studs. Snow tires are extremely and highly recommended on the island. And you could also use studs here, unlike a lot of locations, although they do have to be off by a certain date, I believe. You're a stud user.
May. They have to be off by the end of May. You will be pulled over and possibly ticketed if you still have your studded tires on.
My recommendation is just buy a good set of Michelin X-Ice tires and you won't need the studs.
And I know you're not a big advocate or fan of them, but this is my first time on PEI. So my very first vehicle, obviously I didn't have studs. And then I ended up with studs because and being a realtor in my line of work, I'm out on the road a lot. And as soon as I put my studded tires my first winter, I was sold. That was what I was going to end up with for the rest of my time on PEI. Well, this past year, I just switched and I've got an Atlas, and I ended up just getting regular winter tires, and I don't like them. I miss my studs. I will ride these tires out until they need to be replaced. However, I am a huge advocate. We do get sometimes icy, slippery roads, or as the islanders call it, slippy road conditions. I'm an advocate for studded tires.
They're noisy. Moving along.
Noisy. They sound like a tropical rainforest inside your vehicle.
Yes, probably. They're just noisy. I'm still getting and will probably continue to get phone calls from purchasers and agents asking, what does it cost to heat this house? Or how much is the electricity? We've covered this before, but this question still comes up. It would be the same as me asking somebody that owns a pickup truck, how much should I expect to pay for fuel on a monthly basis? Patty, I know you've got a much better answer than me on both of these things. Why don't you answer that?
Well, and that is a really good, analogy to say, how much is this vehicle going to cost me? How much utility fees can I expect to pay for this house? Well, it depends on how warm or cold you like the house. Do you turn on the heat? It depends on how much electricity consumption do you typically consume. Look at the costs in your existing residence is what I would end up saying for electricity consumption. There are some that are very minimalist and they may pay on average, an average three-bedroom, two-bath family home, that the family is not working from home and the kids are in school, and that you might run around $125 a month, give or take. But if you're working from home and you've got freezers and you've got all this stuff and electronics and, you know, things like that all going on, electric heat, well, you could expect 300 plus, some 500 plus. It just depends on your consumption. So to ask that question seems kind of silly, and I try my best as tactfully as I can to redirect them as to how much do you pay for electricity? Now let's look at the property that you are looking to purchase, and the only variance would be if it's electric heat or some of that consumption, and do you work from home? Again, the heat, I've had elderly clients who were up in their 80s and the house is like a sauna, and I have to make sure that I wear my shorts and t-shirt in the middle of winter to go visit them, because I will end up sick sitting inside that home. And then I have other clients where my feet start to go numb because they make sure that they keep their heat no more than 16, 17 degrees Celsius during the winter months to keep their costs down. So it really comes down to, it is subjective. What do you typically pay now, and what systems do you have in place?
On to what is involved in listing a house without getting into picking an agent, marketing plans, all that sort of stuff. What's physically involved in listing a house to get it on the market, and how quickly that can be done? And I could say I could probably list a house and we'll just forego, well, measuring, like depending on what it is. If it's a bungalow, you can measure that in no time. Some of these houses, you need to be a expert mathematician to figure out what the square footage is. But foregoing measuring or even including it, let's say we can do measuring within 15 minutes, you can probably list a house under 2 hours easy. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Listed as in paperwork, photos, measurements, everything all done within about 2 hours?
Well, photos aren't part of it because we're not going to do the photos. We're going to hire a professional photographer that's going to give us some amazing photos that is going to get more money for that property and make it sell faster. That was a commercial. The process is we're going to get your driver's licenses. We're going to do the FinTrack. We've talked about that numerous times. Financial tracking forms filled out. We're going to fill out an agency disclosure that says we work for you. We're going to fill out the listing documents, which it's 4 pages, which will have the room measurements on it and all little checky boxes. What kind of foundation do you have? What kind of siding? What kind of roofing? All that sort of stuff. And that is it, other than the property disclosure form, which you may or may not fill out depending on the situation. Patty and I both highly recommend you do fill one out. And I usually give the clients that either in advance via email, or I give it to them initially at the beginning of the meeting so they can be finished filling that out by the time I've done the measurements and filled out the forms. And Bob's your uncle. You can, assuming, you know, as fast as you can get those photos done in video, if you're doing it, which you should be, and writing a description, which should be amazing and SEO friendly, you can probably get that property on as fast as you get your marketing materials done by your videographer and your photographer, and you write the description. So probably 24 hours, 48 hours at the most, if all the stars align as far as timing and weather, because you're not going to, biggest challenge in the spring and the winter is just getting a nice day to shoot a house.
Yeah, if somebody is, they want to have, they have a plan in place, they have a place to go, whether they're a job placement and everything is all in order for their move. Now, what do I do? Yes, you call a realtor, you get a price evaluation. If that realtor has no other appointments that day, they could end up visiting the property, bringing their electronic device. They can do a CMA right then and there, have all the paperwork. Once you've established price, then you can go ahead and sign and fill out the paperwork and do the part of the process that you spoke of, Michael, and then just get the photographer, the marketing material together.
In theory, if we had the pictures and the video done preemptively, we could probably get you up and running that same day without any issues.
Yeah, it's not a long process. There is a bit involved, but it can be done within a very quick turnaround time.
Having pictures, and we see this constantly. I mean, I think agents and brokers just think this is the greatest thing since sliced bread, but I just look at it as a giant potential misrepresentation. When you see a picture of 30 or 40 acres and they're indicating the property lines on that photo, I'm thinking to myself, how could they ever know where the exact pins are for that property, and how misrepresentative is this photo of this property, considering if I do buy this acreage and there happens to be a row of really nice tall spruce trees next door, something that I just fall in love with, or birch trees, I buy the property and then the next door neighbor cuts all those trees down because they belong to him or her, but in my photo it represented those trees as mine.
Oh, this has happened.
And it's becoming more problematic as people learn how to use Photoshop and stuff like that.
Yes, I've had all the way up to closing date a buyer showing up at a property, assuming the trees were on their property, only to have the neighbor realize that closing was coming up and this was their last chance. And the trees actually did, they were right on the property line. The neighbor cut them down because they wanted to maximize their views of the water. And they cleared the land. The buyer did have grounds to get out of the contract, although they were extremely disappointed and upset. These property lines, if you have a real savvy, picky buyer, and you're a realtor deciding to do this because you know Canva and you're able to do all this fun little drawing and stuff, arts and crafts in there, they will zoom in and see specifically what tree did you say was included, or how far away from that neighboring shed does this line show that my property is. And even if you say verbally, these are just approximate, because you've made a document, a marketing material, stating that this is the property lines, you just open yourself up. I am not an advocate or proponent. I do have, if somebody does see, I do have two listings that I've just put up that my seller wanted. So they drew the lines. I did not do the lines on there. So they take full responsibility.
So on that picture, just put Fender indicated property lines.
Yes.
And they may or may not be correct. The only thing that's correct is survey markers and a survey that's been recently validated.
Well,
I say recently because you don't want to look at a property and someone moved the survey marker 20 years ago to cut around it, or whatever the case may be, make his land bigger or smaller, her land.
And sometimes the frost could cause that survey marker to pop out.
Oh, that's...
Yeah, I've seen that
happen. That's a bit of a stretch. Those survey markers are 2 feet long.
It's been told to me. And
did you see this happen?
They had to put it back in. Yes.
Oh, Patty, I think you've stepped over the line. Reality here.
I firsthand have seen this.
Yeah, in a lawsuit, when you were sued and the owner said, oh, well, the property line, it jumped up. And it relocated itself 6 feet over. I don't think so, Patty.
It would have said, I thought I put it back where it came out.
Yeah. Obviously didn't win that court case.
I did not go to court, for the record.
The timing off of offers and counteroffers. How many times do you get an offer on a property that's really, really bad, and the purchaser's agent has advised this purchaser to write a really, really bad offer, because the listing agent is going to counteroffer it and fix up everything?
That is more common than I would like to admit. And if you're a buyer listening to this, please know that your offer tells a story of your finances. It tells a story of your interest level, how serious you are. And for a seller that's receiving one of these poorly written offers, my advice to you is, this is just business, not to take it personally, and listen to, hopefully you have a good realtor that is able to interpret the story that this buyer and buyer's agent has written on your property. One of the things that I don't like, Michael, is when a buyer's agent doesn't reach out to me with regards to how long to leave an offer open. I have clients that work shift work or are away, And it surprises me how often they will submit an offer to me, leaving it open because they're trying to be aggressive and maybe, I don't know, show off in front of their buyer, that they're leaving it open for 3-4 hours. And there's no way, I'm in an appointment or my clients are at work, but there's no way we are going to get this addressed.
But the purchaser's attitude plays into that as well, because you get a lot of people, particularly off-island people, that are, we're going to write this offer, and this property's been on the market for 3 months, and they need to sell it. We're only going to leave it for 2 hours, and then we're moving on. And the sellers don't care most of the time. 99.9% of the time is move on. If you're going to be a pain in the ass to begin with, the process isn't going to get any better through the process of getting to the point of conveyance.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes. I don't know who is the pushy one, and I'm sure sometimes it's a little combination and they feed off of one another, but it doesn't put the deal together. Have the buyer's agent should be reaching out to the listing agent. If I were to submit an offer, how much time does your clients need? You know, take a look and see if there's other business cards on the counter. If there's a lot, then the potential that your client might be in multiple offer. Yeah, put in an offer, but still be respectful of the time frame with regards to the other parties involved. If you do have somebody from the big cities across Canada, yeah, they're used to a different real estate game than we have here. And we just don't do business that way. I don't like the pushiness, and it sets off a bad tone right on the onset.
And another reason, or one of the main reasons people are moving here to the Maritimes from other places, is because of the laid-back attitudes and the ability to live longer in a more stress-free environment. The other day I talked to somebody in Toronto, and we're putting some stuff together. This person's like, I'll get that to you. Geez, it will be like a day. It's like, there's no rush. 2 days, 3 days, 7 days. I mean, it's not the end of the world. I was looking for some information on a product, but you could tell they were so stressed and high strung because everyone wanted everything immediately. That's not the Maritimes. So when that offer comes in, it's very rare you're ever going to see an offer that you just sign and accept unless there's been some collaboration between the purchaser's agent and the listing agent. And in that case, you may come up with an offer that, yeah, it looks good. We'll sign it. We've discussed it. Everyone's in agreement. Most of the time, it's either going to be rejected, especially if it's a really poorly written offer. And what I mean by that is offers that are, they have paragraphs in there that should have been omitted, things that aren't initialed properly. They got dates that are missing, dates that are misaligning. We're referring to contract dates that don't exist. Patty?
Yeah, and a list of additional contingencies.
Inclusions that don't exist. I got one. They're asking for the microwave. What microwave? There's no microwave. They're asking for stuff in the kitchen that didn't exist.
Yeah, or they're asking for the John Deere mower. And again, these things should be a conversation before a contract is written. And with the other, with regards to submitting an offer in on a property, make sure that, in my opinion, you write an offer that's painful for the seller to counter, because once you open up Pandora's box, if I'm the listing agent and if I'm countering one thing because the offer was written sloppy and, you know, timelines for financing is 3+ weeks. If it's not a commercial deal, there's no reason for that. If I'm going to counter one thing, guess what? We're just going to go through the whole thing and counter a bunch of stuff.
And in closing of this subject, if I am going to counteroffer, the offer's open till today at 4 p.m. Today, right now, it's noon. When do I have to counteroffer?
You should respond by 4, but you
never have to respond ever.
I feel it is a courtesy to say my client is not accepting your offer.
We will counteroffer next week.
We are discussing a counter, and you can counter at any time. But I think out of fairness to that buyer, even if they did write a poorly written offer, and maybe they don't, they're none the wiser, in their defense, I feel it is a respect thing in business to at least notify the buyer's agent and say, just letting you know, we will not be accepting this offer as it is written, but we are discussing the possibility of a counter, which means that offer hasn't been outright rejected. A good realtor wouldn't reject an offer. They would try their best to pull some, unless it's list of chaos, but you can counter it anytime. You can counter a week from now. You can counter a month from now, that same contract.
I agree 100%. Let's do what you do best and wrap it up, because we've gone over our allotted time once again. We got carried away.
That's some of these topics are things that are very impassionate. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Michael and Patty Show, otherwise known as MAPS, the Prince Edward Island podcast that helps guide and navigate you through the buying and selling of PEI real estate, and a little bit of just Prince Edward Island fun facts and things that you can expect.
And if you want us to make another episode, be sure to follow or subscribe to the podcast. Give us a star rating, which would have to be 5 stars or more. I think we deserve that. And some feedback. Thanks again for listening, and have a great day.
Have a great day.